The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 590, recorded on October 13th, 2020.
Welcome to the 590th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 423rd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Right, so there's a lot of stuff going on right now. I mean, we could talk... Actually, it's going to be a part of the later news anyway. Yeah, we could talk about various games that are being played. I mean, the Zelda ripoff that's free from China. Everybody wants to talk about that. I'm not interested in talking about it. For those who don't know, the free-to-play Breath of the Wild clone is... Oh, damn, I forgot the name of it already.
Genshin Impact.
Yeah. Yes.
So, and yeah, we're not going to talk about it. There's no real news about it right now. But there's other news too, and we're not going to talk about it either. And now I'm trying to remember what the hell I was going to talk. I was going to mention that was important. Oh yeah, you know, a lot of stuff that is coming down in price. I mean, you can get a 12 terabyte external hard drive for a ridiculous price. I think of like $175 right now. That is just insane. 12 terabytes. How much do you think you could fit on that thing, you know?
That's a lot.
All the games in my Steam library?
Yeah, basically. Even more impressive, there's an internal solid-state hard drive, 1 terabyte, for $102, which is also good. So, yeah, things are really coming down in price. We should be seeing a lot of... As Black Friday approaches, right now Amazon's having their sale, which is why you have all these low prices. And also, this coming week, there's going to be a lot of new games coming out, which I'm really looking forward to. I mean, Age of Empires 3 is coming out, which is going to be on Game Pass. Jackbox Party Pack 7 is coming out, so I'm having a party, you know, a stream on Thursday for that. I mean, four of them I can do in a stream. The other one would require everybody to be on Discord because it requires you to get up and talk. And you really can't do that on a stream unless everybody's on Discord. But yeah, let's talk about what we've been playing. And some news, a news item that just popped up 11 minutes ago. Leisure Suit Larry, Wet Dreams Dry Twice has been delayed to October 23rd. Which is a shame because the last Leisure Suit Larry game that came out actually was well received. You reviewed it, didn't you, TJ?
I didn't, but I have played it, and it is very good. Yeah.
Anyways, I've been playing Baldur's Gate 3. And before I mention it, it's a sad story. I actually purchased Front Office Football. Front Office Football 8. And it's the first game I ever had to have refunded on a Steam, which is sad because I played the earlier games, including the college years, and it's just the interface is just unworkable. I couldn't figure out how to do anything, which is deadly for a sports sim. So unfortunately, I had to return it. It just was unworkable. It's sad. But I used that money and just spent... I was hemming and hawing on Baldur's Gate 3, and I said, screw it, I'm going to play it. I'm going to buy it. Usually I don't get single player experiences on early access, but in this case I had to because I kept on seeing all these videos, and I said, you know what, I want to try some of that. And I tried it. And it's buggy as hell. Well, not buggy as hell, it just has a lot of... Well, there are bugs, but... There are a lot of curious decisions they made with gameplay. It worships at the altar of the random number god a bit too much. Now, I know that's Dungeons & Dragons, but a little hint. When you play tabletop Dungeons & Dragons, the DM can say, no, screw the die roll, I'm just going to decide on this. You know, and that's what the game should do. What's interesting is that you actually have a narrator who is a DM, and they tell you what's going on. It's like you do something and it says, you notice that the kobold is acting kind of funny. You know, so it's sort of like you're playing with a DM, too. The graphics are wonky, but then again, it's early access. And you know what? It's a typical Larian game, so I can already see that you'll have tons and tons and tons of options on how you want to play the game. It's also following the D&D 5th edition in that there are no alignments. There's no lawful neutral, chaotic evil, whatever have you. Which is sort of disappointing, because I actually like that kind of constriction, but it does allow you to more options, I guess, where you don't have to worry about something that your alignment won't allow.
Yeah, Pillars didn't have alignments either when they had their games.
Yeah. But this is my advice to Scott, who's really, really interested in Baldur's Gate 3. You can afford to wait.
Yeah, it does seem like there's a lot of the stuff for them to fix and a lot to keep working on. But I have heard that there is a lot of variety for what's there. I guess it's just the prologue in the first chapter or so. And you can do all sorts of crazy choices, like I guess helping goblins kill part of people that didn't deserve it, and you can
I'm going to give you a little spoiler. It's the first act, so it's not much of a spoiler. The druids are real assholes, and you may want to get them all killed. Because basically, the person who's in charge right now, she is an authoritarian bitch. To the point in which it requires a skill check of 18 or higher, which is really hard to get, to persuade her to let a little girl go. Most of the time, she'll kill the little girl. So, yeah. You can see where you might want to. On the other hand, since you have an Illithid tadpole in your head, the goblins might actually see you as one of the anointed. You can convince them. So you can stroll through their village without having to attack them. So there's a lot of options in there.
I mean, options is good, you know, the way you can try to play the way you want to and not feel like you're railroaded into a choice, which some games are like that, where the choice doesn't feel legitimate. But in this one, it feels like you can do whatever you want, and I guess the consequences are, you know, maybe they're mitigatable, that you'll live with it. I know a lot of people in Fallout 3 loved blowing up Megaton, so I'm sure there's going to be lots of similar stories in Baldur's Gate 3 where people are just doing horrendous, atrocious things because they can.
Well, you won't be quote-unquote rewarded for being good or evil. You'll just have something happen. The one thing I like is that my first character is a thief, and they're not useless. Which is often the case in role-playing games, computer role-playing games, in which if you play a rogue, it's kind of useless. Here, you actually can do a lot of things, not the least of which is pick locks and stuff like that. But you can also sneak, you can also do stealth. The stealth is kind of crappy, though. I hope they make it a little bit better.
You were able to do the kind of stuff in Baldur's Gate and Pillars.
Yeah, but this one is more, you sneak around as in not have to interact, you know, and get around.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's possible for you to accidentally leave your teammates behind, just like in,
Pillars and Baldur's Gate.
No, Wasteland 3.
You could definitely leave them behind in
accidentally, and they have to be with you for some stuff to cut, because they'll automatically follow the leader's characters. So that's something that needs to be fixed. But yeah, I mean, they need to make some of the skill check. Like, if I'm going to convince one guard of something, let me make it so that all the guards are convinced, not have to do the same high skill check 15 times. So, like I said, it's very promising. But if you're really interested in Baldur's Gate 3, don't bother. The saves are going to be useless anyway when they update the game. So, you know, any progress you make is going to be nullified, so that's another reason not to get it now. But on the other hand, it was also so many people bought Baldur's Gate 3 on early access. It brought Steam to its knees. It crashed Steam for a little bit.
Yeah, this early access is for those that want to help the bug finding and feedback of the development to make it a better game.
They just wanted to play it because they saw it they just wanted to play it. You know, they've been hearing about it for so long. Let's face it, Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 are kind of long in the tooth. Even the enhanced editions. One of the interesting things is I really don't see immediately. I know that it's connected, but in the beginning you really don't have any connection to the God of Murder or anything else that happened in 1 and 2.
You wouldn't have anything to do with the God of Murder, with the ball spawn. I'm sure that is not the focus of this game's story.
Well, actually, here's the thing. The first level of Hell, you're going to be in Avernus. I mean, you're only in Avernus briefly, and you go back up to... But, from what I understand, Avernus is going to be a major part of it. So if you're spending your time in Asmodeus's hangout, then I'm pretty sure that the Gods of Murder are going to be involved. Because you're in the first level of the Abyss.
I guess I'll have to see maybe if your character from the first game shows up as the Lord of Murder. I don't know.
It's not going to get any... I wonder if it's going to do that thing in which they ask you about it. Oh, like in Knights of the Old Republic 2. Oh, I heard that she... No, you heard it all wrong. It was a heat, you know, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Without using a
save file. They did that in Pillars 2 as well. They had a little... The Lord of Dead had an interview with you to find out what you did and what you were. And that way you didn't have to import your save data if you didn't want to. And so it would go over your achievements and whatnot. And that's how you would generate your character for Part 2.
Oh, by the way, they just patched Baldur's Gate 3. So there was a bug that was save game bug. So I'm going to have to ask TJ. TJ, have you been playing Spelunky 2?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So one of the news items we're not going to discuss is that Spelunky 2's first area is getting patched so that it's easier. Apparently, the opening levels were brutal.
Shouldn't they be, though?
There's a lot of people who didn't play Spelunky 1, you know.
I know, but, like, Spelunky is, like, I don't know. I think it's really funny in the way that it, like, actually, factually beats the crap out of you at every turn mercilessly.
See, Scott, I never thought I would hear TJ say, get good.
He plays a fighting game. Of course he's part of the get good crowd.
I don't know. Like, I get it. I get that, Well, I mean, no, not really. It's a roguelike. Mm-hmm. Roguelikes are notoriously hard.
Yeah.
But there are very few roguelikes I can even draw to mind that aren't just, like, painfully angsty and hateful.
Yeah. There's a lot of things going on with the PlayStation 5, too, which is a lot of it is kind of negative. The one that's annoying everybody in the U.S. is that they're saying, well, you can't use your PS4 controllers with the PlayStation 5, even though there's no real reason for that to happen, because they're all Bluetooth. There should be no reason that you couldn't use your PlayStation 4 with your controller with your PlayStation 5, except for the fact they want more money from you.
Yep.
And the thing is that Microsoft already said, you know, you can use any controller. We don't care. You can use your Xbox One with your Xbox Series X, blah, 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 blah. The one thing that really has me not puzzled, but chuckle, is the thing that is outraging everybody in Japan about the PlayStation 5 is that they're switching the functionality of the O and the X buttons.
Yeah, that's a thing. That is truly a thing.
It just makes me chuckle. That's the thing they're upset about.
Because, like, to Japan, and it makes sense once you think about it, like, an X means no. An O means go.
And they just switch your buttons. I mean, here, you know, most of us, you know, if you're using an Xbox controller and other things, you know, B is usually, it's A, B, you know, and A is, you know, is the action button, and B is usually the cancel button. So, yeah, but just swap the symbols then. I don't know. Sony's Sony's thinking is that they want to make everything unified. You know, everything has to be, international. You know, just make everything one rule. No. Sony's a Japanese company, and they're pissing off the Japanese, who are probably going to say, "You know, fuck you. We're just going to play the Switch."
Yeah. You want to hear what I've been playing about?
What?
Genshin Impact. I actually have been playing the heck out of that game.
Well, before we go on that, last bit of thing is that the PlayStation 5 also runs hotter than the Xbox Series X. But here's the thing. It runs hot, the hottest it gets, which is when it's being, when it's really working hard, it'll get to 65 degrees Fahrenheit. 65 degrees Celsius, which may be really hot. I think that's like 150 degrees Fahrenheit. But here's the thing: PCs can run hotter, and usually you don't really worry until it reaches like 75 or 80 degrees Celsius. It's when it's hit 90 that you start to have alarm bells. Like, okay, turn it off now. So they actually run cool. The only thing is that the PlayStation 5 is humongous.
Did you also hear that the hard drive is soldered to the motherboard, so you can't replace the hard drive?
Oh, I didn't know that, but...
So, did you see the strip-down video they did the other day?
I think so, yeah.
So, during that strip-down video, a few things that they showed off... A, there's like four different cooling systems for this machine. It's got a cooling fan that draws in air from both sides of the console.
That's gonna cause problems.
It has like a vent somewhere to push things out, but like it draws in air from both sides at the top.
You use it as a vacuum cleaner, okay?
yeah, that kind of tells me that it might be a little loud.
Here's the thing though. They said it was gonna be. Silent though. That's, you know.
There's also a liquid cooling system on the chip. It's a liquid metal cooling system built into the CPU, I do believe.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then finally, there's a heatsink, which is not out of the ordinary for a lot of consoles. A lot of them have heatsinks. This one is designed in a particular way that it's supposedly going to work like a. They say there's the difference between them is like there's a heat pipe and then there's a vapor chamber. Vapor chambers are better, and the way that the heatsink on the PS5 is built to operate like a vapor chamber.
Well, now you know why the thing is gigantic.
So yeah, that heatsink is easily like. That heatsink itself takes up like a sixth of the system's innards.
You know, Microsoft said that the PS5 was built very inefficiently. You know, Microsoft engineers. And you look at the Xbox Series X. You know, it's actually smaller than people thought. Oh yeah, that's right. There was an unboxing video that was pulled down because someone got their hands on an Xbox Series X, which I think they're not supposed to. And he could palm the entire Xbox Series X in the palm of his hand. And he didn't have giant hands either. Did you see that? Did you see the unboxing video?
I didn't see that.
Okay, it was pulled, but, you know, mirror sites have it. They also had shots of the Xbox Series X boxed in the warehouse. So now you know what the box looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I said, 1 month from now. Oh, yeah, and a new shipment of Xbox One, Xbox Series X's and PlayStation 5's were on the market again, and they vanished within a few hours. Maybe less. Here's the thing. I think I'm just going to do the old-fashioned thing of going to GameStop when they have it in stock and just trading in my Xbox One X, because I saw that the trade-in value is $175 for Xbox One X. So... that's going to take a huge chunk off.
Yeah. I was just surprised by how much... like, the amount of cooling systems they have built into the PS5 tells me that the primary issue of this console was always overheating. Like, the amount of work that they have in the cooling systems alone on this thing is implies to me that that thing was catching fire during development.
Why Alienware and have them design a piece, console for them? I don't get it.
But in any case, let's talk about Genshin Impact.
Okay, so we're going to talk about games we've been playing. I already talked about Baldur's Gate 3. Other than that, you know, I think I'm going to be talking about Age of Empires 3 a lot. Here's the thing about Age of Empires 3. When I first played it, I was sort of eh about it. Now I'm intrigued to play it again and see if... You know how games are where when you first play them, you're like, I'm not so sure I like this. But then you play it again like 2 years later and say, oh yeah, this is really, really cool. You know? Have you ever had a game like that, Scott or TJ? Where you were sort of like you were cold on a game, but when you started playing it, like after you took a long break from it, you said, oh, wait a minute, this is actually pretty fun.
Yeah.
What was it, Scott?
Trials from the Sky, actually. I played for a little bit, and I had stopped, and then like months later, I came back and pushed my way through the beginning, and then I got really into the story, and I was like, oh, you know what, this is actually really good and fun, so I kept playing it.
How about you, TJ?
I've never had a game that like pulled me back. I've never really had a game that pulled me back in after it lost me.
Okay. So tell us about your new favorite game.
It is not my favorite game, but it is interestingly good, especially so.
By the way, for those of you who don't know, this game is free to play, just so you know.
Yes. It's a free to play game with gacha systems, which means that, it wants you to buy pulls that are basically like of differing rarities of character or gear. And quite frankly, for being a free-to-play game with monetization systems like that, it's pretty generous. Like, you can play around 20 to 30 hours of Genshin Impact without ever spending a dime. Not to say that it doesn't try to convince you to do it every step of the way, but it is. People have referred to it as a Breath of the Wild clone. It doesn't take long to move a little bit past that. Like, it does have those same like free-form exploratory systems and adventure. But like, I really like the way that you have these different characters that you can switch between in the game, because you collect characters along the way.
I think that aspect right there makes it very different from Breath of the Wild.
Right.
Go on.
Because each of these characters has an element to them. And not only that, but they also have different attacks, different specials, different things that they can do. And the element interaction in that game is really cool. Like, you said, okay, so like, for instance, there's fire, there's wind, there's electricity, there's all the normal stuff. Your main character can like do an attack where he creates a tornado with his sword and it gathers enemies up. Now, if you used another character that had fire abilities and they set an area on fire and that tornado passed through it, that tornado would become a fire tornado. And it's just so cool how things interact like that. I found this out by complete accident, just by messing around with the characters. And, like, I love it. I love the way that they...
Why didn't you think the fire tornado wasn't hot? You should have said it was hot.
It was hot. It was especially hot for everything caught in it.
So have you tried putting in forbidden words in it, like Taiwan or Hong Kong? Or
that's a problem. And
You know what? Everybody talks about those. I'm wondering, did they also censor out Winnie the Pooh?
I mean, I haven't tried, but like,
I bet you they did. They, you can't say Winnie the Pooh.
And here's
like,
the fact. And
what, as a character name or something?
Well, here's the thing. The Chinese leader has basically banned any references to Winnie the Pooh because you kept on being called Winnie the Pooh.
Right.
In the game, what text are we talking about?
So Genshin Impact has a chat filter, and some of the words on that chat filter make sense, like Stalin, Hitler, Nazi, things like that, words that are generally associated with toxicity. Other words are more questionable, such as Jonah pointed out, Hong Kong, Taiwan. There was another one that's basically a philosophy that the Chinese government has banned.
Oh, Long Gong, yeah.
Yes.
Which is a cult, by the way. I mean, but still.
And the fact of the matter is, MiHoYo, the developer, is a Chinese mainland developer. Yep. And every developer that works in China has to adhere to the government's rules, or they can't publish their game.
Well, that not just Chinese developers. We also have American developers who release special Chinese version of games.
Yeah, but like what I'm saying is that American developers can get away with not censoring their game if they just don't want to release in China. If you're a Chinese developer, you can't release your game if you don't follow your government's rules, and that's just the unfortunate fact of the matter. It sucks, and I'm not saying it's right, but...
What was the name of that game that was banned, that was pulled? It was sort of a walking simulator, but it was pulled because it had a tiny little reference that the Chinese government didn't like. I forgot the name of it. Something. And it was basically, you know, it was sort of like a walk around Silent Hill. I mean, you know.
I don't know. Let me see here.
Anyways. Well, I'm surprised you haven't played Spelunky 2 yet. The Devotion.
No,
it was the Devotion. That was the game.
I have a code for it, and I want to get around to it eventually, but I just haven't gotten there yet. I have had a lot of things to play. But that said, like, I don't agree with the censorship. It was always going to be that way because that's what Chinese developers have to go through. I don't blame them for existing in China. It sucks.
By the way, the reason why the Devotion was banned was because it actually linked Xi Jinping, who is the leader of China, to Winnie the Pooh.
Right.
Wow.
Which is also why Winnie the Pooh is generally frowned upon by the Chinese government.
Well, just by one leader who doesn't like being made fun of by being called Winnie the Pooh.
Yep. But that aside, Genshin Impact is probably the most generous free-to-play game I've seen in a long time. Like, you can play 20 to 30 hours of that game without spending a dollar on it. And, I mean, like, there are things about it that are very much Breath of the Wild. So to say – so even if your full perception of it is that it's just free-to-play Breath of the Wild clone, that's not such a bad thing. I don't know. I've been enjoying it. I don't like the censorship, but I do enjoy what the game offers.
That's what's important, that it's a fun game that you enjoy.
I mean, here's the thing, you know, there's a lot of people who don't play Breath of the Wild. I know it's not, it still gets compared to Breath of the Wild. But, you know, if it appears on a lot of platforms in different ways, it's fine. It's fine.
Right. Because, like, Breath of the Wild isn't available in China. This was one of the reasons this game exists, is that they can't play Breath of the Wild. And
they play Breath of the Wild
because Chinese like the amount of red tape it takes to get a game approved from outside of China is kind of staggering.
It's also there's also a sort of general dislike between Japan and China anyway. So
yeah,
says we don't need their money. Fuck them.
They only just got the Nintendo Switch released in China this last year, like earlier this year. That system has been out for like 4 years.
Because I'm pretty sure I saw Ayudin Chronicles was going to do a Chinese translation or localization.
Right, but what I'm saying is that it only just came out in China this year.
Right. That is crazy.
And I think only a handful of the Nintendo Switch games are actually approved in China yet. I don't think Breath of the Wild is one of them. So it is what it is.
Yeah.
But so I mean, like, it's also kind of cool that, like, there's this thing, because Genshin Impact is also available on PS4, PC, and mobile devices. And it actually has a pretty good mobile interface. So, like, being able to play a game of that magnitude just on a mobile phone is kind of cool.
So what have you been playing, Scott?
Nothing new, unfortunately. Just some more Trials in Cold Steel, more Suikoden 2.
By the way, we took a week off here, so a lot of stuff has happened between then and the last podcast.
Yes. I've been enjoying the Halloween update. I've been decorating my island with spooky furniture and collecting candy for the Halloween night. So I've been having fun with that. And again, playing some Suikoden 2 and a little bit of Minecraft and Trials of Cold Steel. And, you know, this is a really tough time right now. And so I don't really have the luxury to just go and buy a game. And I was actually going to play Genshin Impact, but I just didn't get to it.
By the way, I've also started playing Civ 6 again. I've started regaining some interest, so now I have one game which I have a really good start with as the Canadians. So
there's going to be a pirate update, and I'm definitely going to play that because that's a free update for everyone.
Yep. There's a pirates mode coming in, which, you know, for those who don't know, Sid Meier also did a little game called Sid Meier's Pirates, and it's going to be honored this week with the pirate scenario.
You have four different factions, and you get to mess with the Dutch, Spanish, and English armadas.
You have the Dread Pirate, the Privateer, the Swashbuckler, or the Hoarder.
Yeah, and you're going out and collecting artifacts and battling to you know, I guess, make a name for yourself in the Age of Pirates.
Yeah. I just wish they would re-release Pirates as the original Pirates, you know, not the remake or anything like that.
Isn't it on Good Old Games? I thought it was.
Yeah, that's not the original Pirates. I'm talking about the old C64 Pirates. There was also a remake that was in like the late 90s. So, anyways, yeah. But that wasn't the reason why I started playing Civilization. Here's the thing. Right now, there's a dearth of good turn-based games that I'm playing. So I'm laying off Slay the Spire for a bit. So I'm saying, you know, let me just play some Sid Meier's Civilization 6. I still haven't gotten the Game Pass though, for the new one.
Mm-hmm.
They keep on releasing character videos for the new Civ 6 though. What was the last one they showed? Not the Maya.
I think it was one of the an offshoot of the Romans or something.
No, I think there was a Mesoamerican one that they showed off.
Dang it, I forgot. I saw it and now I can't remember. It's a guy in armor and has a crown. Of course they have a crown. I'm just trying to remember what it was.
Byzantium.
Oh, okay.
Byzantium and Gaul. Which are both offshoots of... Byzantium is the Holy Roman Empire.
Right.
Gaul is what would later become France.
Mm-hmm.
Which is going to be odd if you have Gaul and France in the same game.
Yeah, that stuff happens. It's funny.
I mean, the Gauls are basically, I won't say barbarians. They were, they weren't Vandals either, because the Vandals are, maybe the Vandals are going to be next. They're the Germanic tribe.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, Byzantium and Gaul were recently showed off.
Okay, yeah.
What was that, TJ?
Oh, that was just a cough. Sorry about that.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the first news item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Level 5 has reportedly halted nearly all operations in North America. This is from Nintendo Enthusiast. Level 5 International America and spin-off office, Level 5 Abbey, the arms of Japanese developer Level 5 operating in North America, have all but ceased operations, according to Games Industry Biz. Level 5 is the developer of Professor Layton, Ni no Kuni, and Yo-Kai Watch, among other franchises. Also, Dark Cloud is another one of their franchises. And these North American offices reportedly began winding down operations in mid-2019. The majority of staff at both locations said to have been laid off, with 10 being let go at Abbey in 2019, and roughly the same amount being let go in International America. Level 5 Abbey COO and head of Abbey operations, Yukari Hayakawa, reportedly left the company earlier this year, but has not changed her LinkedIn to reflect this or responded to Games Industry Biz request for comment. Essentially, skeleton crews have been maintaining North America operations as business consolidation occurs between the Japan office and international advertising and branding company Dentsu. What this actually means for Level 5 in North America is not yet certain. While one of the games industry-based sources suggests that there are currently no concrete plans for any more Level 5 games to be released outside Japan, it is probably too early to entertain such doomsday scenarios. Yo-Kai Watch 4 is currently still planned to release in the West, though we have heard nothing substantial about that since last year. The company did at least launch Snack World, the Dungeon Crawl Gold on Nintendo Switch this past February. Taking a glimpse at the International America website, it suggests that North America operations began in full in 2011 with the hopes of creating games in both Japan and North America to cater directly to both markets.
What this basically means is I think they're just going to find another distributor for North American, because I can't believe if they make another Professor Layton game, they're not going to release it in the United States or something.
Yeah, and they're working on another Ni no Kuni game, which I bought both of them, and I bought both Dark Clouds, and I bought all the Layton games, and I've been a big fan of Level 5 for, like, a long time, and in Dragon's Quest VIII, they did, and that was a great game, and it's like, I can't think of a game that I didn't like of theirs, and it's just crazy if they're not gonna do more, so I hope that's what they're doing, they're just reorganizing their distribution. Because I know just because they say there's no plans doesn't mean it's never coming. It just means there's no plans. Eventually, they might. So we'll just have to wait and see, I guess.
DJ? Who muted himself and now has to unmute.
Thank you for reminding me.
A little louder, TJ. Get closer to the mic.
I'm here. You hear me? Hello?
Yes.
That's better.
I think Level 5 did Professor Layton games. They did!
Yes, we just talked about that.
Which means, oh, that's tragic. Well, Professor Layton is like one of my favorite series of all time.
What did you think of Ni no Kuni then?
I haven't played it. It's one of those games that I always thought about getting around to, but just like it also sounded kind of like a chore. So,
Ni no Kuni, like, 2 is strange. It has almost nothing to do with the first Ni no Kuni.
Yeah.
But, those games look delightful. It's just that I know that they're also time-consuming. But,
most RPGs are, yeah.
But, like, I love the Professor Layton games. I love them. They are some of my favorite games of all time. I love sitting down and spending hours just solving puzzles all day long.
They also did the Dark Cloud games, and they did Dragon's Quest VIII, and so they've done a lot of games. And it's like kind of disappointing to hear this. I don't know.
I wonder if Microsoft's looking at this and saying, you know, we could be your distribution partner.
They might. Yeah, they probably would like that.
Yeah, just slap some achievements on it, and we can put it on Game Pass. I think Ni no Kuni 2 is coming to Game Pass sometime in the next few months. I think I read that.
It is on Steam, so it has achievements.
Well, it doesn't have Xbox Live achievements, that does it. But the funny thing is that Ni no Kuni 2 has, you know, the first game is about, you killed your mom, you bastard. Well, number two is you have the President of the United States taking out a gun during an attack, and just there's a nuclear attack, and then he finds himself in a fantasy world. And he has to help another bratty king named Evan?
Evan, he wasn't bratty.
Yeah, you know, Evan is almost naive backwards. Anyways, it's just like both games have nothing to do with each other. So, anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Microsoft sides with Epic in its fight with Apple, and this comes to us from PC Gamer. In August, Microsoft filed a declaration in support of Epic's request for an injunction against Apple's plan to remove its access to iOS development tools. The company said in the filing that the Unreal Engine is, quote-unquote, critical technology for numerous game creators, and that it was taking away Epic's ability to support it on iOS and macOS devices who will, quote-unquote, harm game creators and gamers. Today, Microsoft took more overtly Epic's side in its campaign against Apple with a declaration of, quote-unquote, 10 principles of the Microsoft Store on Windows. This statement makes no direct mention of Epic, Apple, or the iOS App Store, but it very clearly draws a line between Microsoft's online storefront and Apple's. The principles include developers will have the freedom to choose whether to distribute their apps for Windows through our App Store. We will not block competing app stores on Windows. We will not block an app on Windows based on the developer's business model or how it delivers content and services, aka DLC. We will not block an app on Windows based on the developer's choice of which payment system to use for purchasing processing purchases made on its app. In other words, yeah, you can use PayPal if you want. We will give developers timely access to information about the interoperability interfaces we use on Windows, as set forth in our interoperability principles. Basically, they're saying they'll let us figure out how the meat is, how the hot dogs are made with Windows Store. Every developer will have access to our App Store as long as it meets objective. Okay, basically they're saying, we'll curate your stuff. Our App Store will charge reasonable fees that reflect the competition we face from other app stores on Windows and will not force a developer to sell within its app anything it doesn't want to sell. In other words, we're not going to take a chunk of your money, and we're not going to take a chunk from your DLC either. Our App Store will not prevent developers from communicating directly with their users through their apps for legitimate business purposes. Yeah, you can sell things through your app, and we're not going to take a cut. Our App Store will hold our own apps to the same standards to which it holds competing apps. Microsoft will not use any non-public information or data from its App Store about a developer's app to compete with it. Yet, we're not going to read your app's data and figure out how we can make a product that's going to compete with you and take away your money. And our app will be transparent about its rules and policies and opportunities for promotion and marketing, blah, blah, blah. We're going to let you do what you want with your app. The lawsuits between Apple Games and Epic are scheduled to begin on May 3rd, 2021. So basically, Microsoft's sticking both middle fingers at Apple in the iOS store with this. There is another reason, though. And that is not, it isn't just because it's making nice with Epic. Because here's the thing with Microsoft. They want more games in their ecosystem. And indie games are a good way to make the Game Pass nice and fat. And Epic made the Unreal Engine free for indie developers. They no longer have to pay for it, which Epic is able to do because they're making money hand over fist with Fortnite.
It's really kind of surprising that the Mac iOS is, or the Apple Store is making this kind of fight, because they don't really have a whole lot of games, and a lot of times I have to see fans begging developers to put this on the Apple, and the only game that's like exclusive on Apple that I even remotely want is Oceanhorn 2, and for that I'll just wait until it eventually shows up on one of these other consoles, which the first Oceanhorn did eventually. And so I don't know why Apple is...
Well, one thing, most of Apple's store is filled with apps, not games.
Mm-hmm. Just generic casual games that you can just play for 5 minutes and put down, and nothing that you really sink your teeth into that isn't on something else already.
Well, they had the Apple Arcade, but those games eventually went elsewhere. The big thing that Microsoft wants is they want their Xbox Game Pass on iOS devices. It's on Android devices, because Google don't give a shit. Well, Google does care a little bit, but they're not gonna. They say, it's gonna help sell our Android phones, So Microsoft wants their thing on Apple too. As a matter of fact, Steam had to fight long and hard to be able to have their storefront on Apple as well. They had to make a lot of concessions. So, TJ.
I don't think it's much more than the fact that Microsoft really just wants to make sure that Epic is never hindered on any platform, because there are a lot of Epic projects that Microsoft needs to continue to work.
Also, not just that, but indie projects as well. Like I said, indie developers can now use the Unreal Engine for free, and that only helps Microsoft fatten up the Windows Store.
Yes. So I do believe that, I don't know that Microsoft would be doing this if they didn't have such a, I would say, a stake in making sure that the Epic Game Store always remains available on every platform they need it to remain available on.
I think they more care about the fact that they want Game Pass on iOS devices, too.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was... Because, like... I don't know how many people make purchases directly through the Microsoft Store, but I get the feeling that this is more of a superficial and petty slap to the face than it is an actual commitment by Microsoft to be better with their own store. I feel like, yes, the sentiment is probably noble in some ways, but like, I don't know. How much are they really raking in through the Microsoft Store?
Microsoft Store is basically Game Pass. And they actually had 50% growth on Game Pass in the past 6 months, which is it's extremely high rate of growth. Microsoft is really banking on Game Pass. And especially with Amazon coming out with Luna, you know, they need to make sure. I mean, there's two people who are not going to be on Luna. One is Bethesda game. Here's the thing. Luna operates like, right now they have the Bethesda Game Pass. So you can play every single, they have the Ubisoft Game Pass. So you can play every single Ubisoft game using Luna, right? For that.
Mm-hmm.
What they're not going to have is EA, and what they're not going to have is Bethesda. Because Microsoft already made a deal with EA. They have their EA access on Game Pass. And now they own ZeniMax, which means they're going to have to put all their shit on Game Pass. Which is why Doom Eternal is now permanently on Game Pass.
Yeah. Like, but would you say that this is just straight up altruistic and noble by Microsoft?
It's not altruistic. For one thing, Microsoft really wants Game Pass on the iOS devices. And they also want to, you know, be kissy-kissy with Epic. I mean, Microsoft and Epic have been hand-in-hand for a while now. And there's there's another thing that Microsoft has that they want to have more options with on iOS. That's Minecraft. They would love to have more microtransactions on Minecraft on iOS devices, too.
Well, there you go. Like, I don't think there's much more to say than that. This is definitely Microsoft taking a direct shot at Apple for what is continuing to be questionable practices across the board.
Yeah, and there's also something else that's going on, which we really should talk about right now, even though it's not video game related. Six countries, including the United States, are trying to force Apple to have a backdoor to their security on
that's,
iPhone. That's
been something going on for a very long time.
Yeah, now the pressure is up, and that is extremely bad because now you have a backdoor for shady things to happen on your cell phone, which is... I wonder if U.S. is going to back out of it if and when Trump is out of office. No, we're not going to do that. So you have all these things happening with Apple, which makes me nervous. And they just released their new iPhone 12. So, yeah, a lot of shady things are going on with Apple, both for and against them. I am hoping that there's a settlement and Apple just admits, yeah, okay, fine. Here's the thing. Remember all that idiotic DRM that was on all iTunes songs? You know why they got rid of it, right?
Why?
Because Amazon started selling songs without any DRM on it. And Amazon started selling songs hand over fist. And Apple said, oh shit, we gotta take the DRM off our songs if we want to compete. I think a similar thing may happen here. Because now you don't have to... Of course, there are songs. Oh, my older songs still have that stupid DRM on it. So... We're going to move on to the next item. You can take this one, TJ.
All right. Nintendo is reducing the price of Switch Joy-Cons in Japan from GameSpot. If you're in Japan and searching for a new pair of Joy-Con controllers for your Nintendo Switch, you're in luck. VGC is reporting that Nintendo has cut the consumer price of their tiny controllers within the country, bringing them down by over 16% over 3.5 years on sale. Starting November 6, a single Joy-Con will cost 3,740 yen, or about $36 plus tax, down from 4,480, which would be about $43 plus tax. This price cut is being applied across all controller colors and will be available from Nintendo Japan's online store as well as at retailers. While Joy-Cons were previously slightly more expensive in Japan than in the U.S., where a pair costs $80, now they'll cost a bit less. Unfortunately, it's not clear whether Nintendo will similarly cut prices in other regions, especially with the Switch selling extremely well. It's also worth noting that Joy-Cons continue to suffer from drift issues, and Nintendo has been facing lawsuits as a result, including one from a child.
Yeah, I think the lowering of the price is part of that. I think
it didn't seem like it.
They're trying to make them cheaper because of the drift issues. And what's really idiotic is Nintendo's president said, "Yeah, we know there's drift problems," but in court they're saying, "Well, these are made up stories. No one's having any drift problems." What? Did you not hear your own president saying, "Yeah, we're aware of the drift problems," and then in court you're saying, "Nah, there's no drift. It's all in their heads."
Yeah, it is.
All four of my Joy-Cons are doing the drift. And I checked on Nintendo's website. I guess the price is just reduced in Japan only because it seemed about the same price that I've been seeing here, where it's like $70 for a pair and like $43 for one Joy-Con. They really need to fix this because I've had other controllers that just never get drifts ever, and they're cheap controllers too, so I don't know why this is such an issue with Nintendo.
Yeah, here's the other thing is that they actually have one class action lawsuit against the Elite, the Microsoft Elite controller. But here's the big difference. One, it's not widespread among the Elite controllers. Two, Microsoft is very good about repairing your controller. Nintendo, you paid for it. Fuck you. Fuck you. You paid for it already. We don't care. We're not going to replace that. You know the warranty. The warranty was like 2 weeks. Like I said, the repair, people aren't having widespread issues with the Microsoft Elite controller too. They are having, and from what I understand, it's inevitable. Like they will drift on you after a set period of time. And I'm gonna say something about the Joy-Cons. They're cheap pieces of shit. They're just hunks of plastic with a bit of electronics in them. I've seen them. I mean, anybody worth a damn is you should just get a pro controller and just leave the Joy-Cons alone.
Yeah, the pro controllers have been a lot more stable and substantial, and they fit better in your hands, and it's just more comfortable playing.
Now, let me ask you a question. But you can't slot them in the sides of the Switch like you can the Joy-Cons, right?
Right, exactly. You can't, but it still feels good in your hand if you want to play on the big screen TV and you don't care about playing freaking Mario Party. You don't care about playing Mario Party. So it's fine.
Or Mario Odyssey, in which I'll play Mario and you can play as Hat.
Yeah.
I think Nintendo cares a little bit more than Jonah lets on, or than Jonah says, just because like they have repair centers for this stuff. They do that. They've been working on that stuff for a while. It's. I don't know what the.
Here's the thing. I have controllers for the Xbox, you know, and a Logitech controller for the PC that do not have any drift issues. And these are years-old controllers.
I can say the same thing of my Switch controllers. I've had them since... Sure. I bought a launch day Switch, and I've never had drift issues with them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not...
Because you're anointed by God.
I guess, because I have never had an issue with my controllers. I just keep them... I don't know. I don't even know that I keep them totally dust-free, but, like...
I know people who have a launch 360 that never went red ring, so
I was one of those people.
They're the exceptions that prove the rule.
And, like, I'm not saying that I am an exception that proves the rule. I'm just saying, like...
But you are. You don't have to say it. You are.
Because I think that I'm almost certain that Scott protects his stuff too.
I do.
And like I, to a certain degree, I really do think that it's just bad luck and probably some there has to be some level of bad manufacturing, of course.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I will consider getting a Switch 2, but I'm not going to get the original Switch.
I don't understand what makes the drift happen, because I have yet to have it happen.
Something about the contact coming loose.
Yeah.
And
but you know, actually, we should tell people what the drift is. So the drift is that when you're not even touching your controller, the characters will move in one direction. That's the drift, in which you're not touching your controller and it's acting like you're making a movement.
And it's very frustrating when you're playing action games like Breath of the Wild and Link decides to go all off to the left and jump off a cliff when you're trying to go to the right.
Oops.
Yeah, I can definitely see where it's annoying.
Well,
I hope that whatever the issue, like, and they like they pushed out a patch, a firmware patch for the Pro Controller that apparently stopped drift on the Nintendo Switch Pro Controller. I don't understand why they can do that for the Pro Controller but not the Joy-Cons.
They're different hardware though.
I think it's a hardware issue with the Joy-Cons.
I mean, what you could perhaps do is if they're an analog stick, you can make it so that you really have to push on one side to get the move. But that still doesn't help because then you can't do subtle movement. All I know is that a Joy-Con is manufacturing price probably about $350.
Yeah, I think the Joy-Cons are definitely overpriced. They feel overpriced for this tiny little controller. I feel smaller than the original Nintendo controller. It's just so tiny in your hand.
Party Joy-Cons? I mean, Lord knows. You do have. See, I'm looking at a question here. Are there any third-party Joy-Cons?
I don't know.
So they have Oevo brand Joy-Cons. So, I mean, the other answer is to get someone else's Joy-Cons that are less expensive and hardier.
I know they have adapters to make it feel bigger in your hand.
Well, it isn't that. It's just that you want something that you can plug onto the sides of your Switch so that you can bring it to bed with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that aspect is nice to be able to do. I mean, that's the point of the thing is to switch between modes.
Which is why at some point I'm going to get the Razer controller for my cell phone. I mean, I did get one of those clips which you can clip onto the top of a Bluetooth controller, but no, I just want something fancy that's sort of like playing a Switch. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ, on this one.
Torchlight will leave early access today from PC Gamers Inn.
By the way, today is October 13th.
Torchlight is just about ready to leave Steam's early access program. The loot-packed action RPG has added tons of content since it first arrived just 5 months ago. And now it's gearing up for its official launch. The Torchlight 3 release date is set for October 13th. Over the course of Torchlight 3's whirlwind early access period, developer Ektra Games itself has forged from the remnants of the original Torchlight studio Runic, has added new regions, reworked its subclass mechanics, and rebalanced a live game to keep up with community feedback, all in a relatively short amount of time. It's all happened with COVID work from home restrictions in place, giving developers more time to spend with their families and with their pets. In Torchlight 3, you find new pets as you progress through the campaign. Each of these has a new skill that it will teach the other pets in your stable when it arrives in your fort, which is a structure, as Schaefer pointed out, that represents all of your account-wide progress. It's another new feature in Torchlight 3, and it's designed so players will see that they're progressing towards something when they're playing a new character or one that's leveled up into the in-game. The pet skill system means that you can swap out pets at any time, and they can take any pet skills that you've discovered along with them. If you've gotten attached to the black cat in the game because you have a real black cat at home, you can keep that pet with you while giving it the skills that come with new pets you discover in Torchlight 3's dungeons. Going to add on, this isn't part of the story, but that implies that you can also leave the unwanted and undesirable pet behind.
Aww.
Hey, that's what happens with Pokemon, remember. So, yeah. Which one of you two are the big Torchlight fan?
I like Torchlight. It's a really good game. I played the first two Torchlights. They are a little bit like, a Diablo clone.
Or at least the first Torchlight
inspired by Diablo.
Diablo Light is kind of easy. The second Torchlight improved it. So it's interesting to see what the third Torchlight is. Because I haven't seen anything of it, actually.
It's a fun game, I think, and Diablo Light is probably a good explanation of it. You get quests, you go collecting loot, and you have your pet that has abilities and can go to the store for you if you want. If you want to like lighten your inventory, which is something I always felt like should be in those Diablo games, some sort of like quick, let me sell this stuff so I can keep collecting loot. It's a fun series and had nice music and from what I remember.
Torchlight 3 now that it's released.
Probably. That seems like a good idea, I think.
Sounds like you're going to be. I'm going to wait until there's a sale.
Yeah, I am in the habit of doing that.
I just mean Torchlight 3 is one of those games in which if you're not a real huge fan, it's sort of like, you know what? I'll wait until it's like $14 or $15. You know.
Yeah. I mean, I still like it. It's just, it's not like it.
How about you, TJ? Have you played Torchlight? That's a no. I have to unmute my mic again. Answer. Unless he fell asleep.
Sorry, I have never played these games.
Really? You've never played Torchlight?
No, they always looked like Diet Diablo.
Diet Diablo. Well, the first one definitely was. I mean, with the first Torchlight, all you needed was a bunch of healing potions and you'd never die.
Well, I felt like that's you could say that about Diablo.
The difficulty would ramp up. In Torchlight, It was like, you could get 500 healing potions and maybe use three of them.
I remember when I first played Diablo 1 and somebody, speed ran me through to Diablo just so I could beat them within, 30 minutes. And then killed any desire for me to play the game after that.
I would... No. See, here... The Diablo games and other games like this, I guess you can include Path of Exile with this, they're supposed to be savored,
Yeah, definitely. That's why I don't get this whole speedrunning, fascination of get to the end really quick, and it's like... But, you're not enjoying the game. You just, just click the win button and be done with it. And when... I did that when somebody, just ran through the game real quick. It was like, oh, let's just do this real quick. And I was just like, okay, that's really easy, and now I don't care, and now I'm done, and I'm going to go do something else.
Lately they had someone speed running Super Mario 64 in under 30 minutes. Why? They also did it with Mortal Shell, too. Here's the thing, I know that... Wasn't that part of your job there, TJ, when you're with Twin Pals, just recording all the speedruns?
Checking into them, seeing we had speedruns submitted to us a lot, and I would also do news stories on stuff like that and interview people like that. I don't know.
They had one speedrun of Sonic 2 for 16 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's just. Why? Oh, by the way, I should mention Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is free right now on Steam.
I do appreciate that Torchlight has come into its own and that it's not like I said, the reason why I haven't played it is that it seemed too much like Diablo to me, like loot and grind. And that's just not – like every time it's ever come out, it's just not the kind of game I'm looking for at the time it comes out. And
that's how Grim Dawn felt to me. It was very loot and grind and like the same kind of enemies. So it felt like I was just playing Diablo, but it's called Grim Dawn. And I just kind of got tired of it as well. It was like, I'd just rather play something else that doesn't feel like Diablo.
You know a game I want to play that I do have access to, and that's Darkest Dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
That's a roguelike, but it's a psychological roguelike.
Right, where you're supposed to be, you're losing your sanity as you go deeper into the dungeons.
It's not just that, it's just that you're the heroes that you use start getting neuroses, and they start acting mm-hmm. strangely because they start getting, you know, PSD. But yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. My brain is just looking forward because October 15th there's going to be a lot of nice stuff coming out. It's that time of year, folks. It's that time of year in which all the good stuff is coming out now. Let me ask you, what are you looking forward to there, Scott? What game is coming out soon that you're really looking forward to?
I need to look up what is coming out because I'm not aware of anything.
You're not? Come on, there has to be... Even I have games that I'm looking...
I'm looking. don't know what they are. let's see. Okay. I think this is the right list, I hope. Wise Origin. Already have Wise. Let's see. Super Mario 35. Not interested. Crash Bandicoot. Not interested.
Not interested in Crash Bandicoot 4?
Nah. Let's see. Falcon Age. Oh, that's where you get to play a falcon? I think that was cool.
No, that's the one in which you train falcons. The Falconeer is the one in which you're thinking of. I mean, you have the new Dark Pictures game, you know, Little Hope, which is... Was it Underdark? That was a TJ that they... The first one that they did, that was the PS4 game, Until Dark?
Till Dark.
Supermassive Games. That. Yeah, you remember that was the one in Until Dawn. I'm sorry, the one in which you're basically playing in a slasher film.
Yes. I can never remember. I always conflate Supermassive and Supergiant Games, and I always get confused which one's which sometimes.
And then they did Man and Medan, and now they're coming up with Little Hope. And by the way, Little Hope is only going to be $30, which is.
I found the game, Raji the Ancient Epic. I hope I pronounced it right. Where that young girl chosen by the gods to stand against the demonic invasion of the human realm. That looks pretty good. I remember liking that game.
You know, it's coming out, you know, in like 2 weeks? Watch Dogs Legion. That I'm really looking forward to. And by the way, it's only a month away, Cyberpunk 2077.
Oh, okay.
All that crunch is finally laid off. Oh, God.
Oh, Cold Steel 4 is coming out this month. Wow. I gotta catch up. I got so many games.
Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
I gotta play the Crossbell games before I even end.
Link's
and
Crossbell?
Cold Steel 2, 3, jeez. But I've been told that... that Trials Cold Steel 4 is like the Avengers and all the stories come together. The Crossbell story, the Cold Steel story, the Trials in the Sky story all come together in this fourth game.
Oh, okay.
So it's crazy.
Well, what about you, TJ?
Is there a game that I'm looking forward to?
Well, it's coming out like in the next month. I'm pretty sure you're looking forward to Cyberpunk.
I mean, yeah, Cyberpunk is going to be the one that I'm watching closely.
What about Assassin's Creed? Are you interested in Valhalla at all?
Demon's Souls is coming out on the launch day of PS5.
Yeah, it's also on PC at some point too.
it's the Dark Souls of Demon's Souls.
Well, yeah, I mean
that's true. That
do you have any interest in Valhalla?
No, the company that makes it is absolute trash, and I refuse to support them.
Damn.
Wait, are you really that down on Ubisoft?
God, Yeah, I mean, like, geez, how many times can they fuck up over? Do you know how many times I have to write about the new thing that Ubisoft did?
But Izumo came on a video and apologized.
He also, like, the most recent one that I wrote about is that he released a letter announcing that over 25% of people at Ubisoft had experienced some sort of sexual or workplace harassment.
Well, they are French. They're French-Canadian.
It's like, man, I like Rainbow Six Siege. I do.
Playing that a while ago.
I like certain Ubisoft games. I like the idea of Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Yeah, whenever that's coming out.
Oh man, I want to play Phoenix Rising. That looked like a good game too.
I was about to say, yeah, there's also Immortals Phoenix Rising too.
Ah, man.
I'm playing Genshin Impact, so I forgot about it.
I don't think that's Ubisoft, is it? Well, is Immortals Phoenix Rising? Oh, it is Ubisoft. That's right. I forgot about it.
Okay, so like Bugsnax. Bugsnax is also coming out on November 12th, and I'm going to play the hell out of that. Because that game is bizarre and hilariously weird. I like everything I've seen about that game, and it just, like, it's Bugsnax.
You know what? You know what game is coming out that I didn't think I wanted to play, but I do want to play? And that's the new Yakuza game, Like a Dragon. Chiefly because it's not an action game. It's not an action game, that's a plus for me. Because, you know, I want something that's really wild and bizarre and really out there. That's a Yakuza game, but I don't really like the action part of the Yakuza games. I don't find the action satisfying. Since Yakuza Like a Dragon is going to be a turn-based RPG, then you know what? I'm all for it.
Yes. It looks fun as hell too. Like the amount of nods and the amount of like cheekiness that it looks more. It looks like the most Yakuza game that they've ever done.
Yeah, but without having without the dumb plots. I mean, now they're just leaning on the dumb. Now they're just making it insane.
Yeah. I mean, for goodness sake, you pull out your cell phone, do all sorts of crazy swipes, and summon a deadly lobster.
No, not a bunch of deadly lobsters.
It's just great. I love everything that we've seen about that game. But no, I would have to say that the two that I'm most looking forward to in this coming month are definitely going to be Bugsnax and Demon's Souls.
And not Cyberpunk?
I'm definitely looking forward to Cyberpunk, but it's not like it's not the highest thing on my list, I don't think. I'm not as into Cyberpunk as everybody else is. Mostly because I don't think that a game that's hyped that much can live up to it.
You know what game?
Yeah, that can be worrisome.
Yeah, I'm going to probably buy 13 because I never got to play the original 2003 game. But, well, XIII. It's 13. It's just, for those who don't know, that's the that game was well ahead of its time because it was a cel-shaded shooter with on-screen sound effects. You know, when she wrote out the sound effects like it was in a comic book. And I never got to play 13. Because one thing I heard, it was also buggy as hell. So I'm looking forward to the remake, and I'm going to try it out.
Yeah, it should be fun. Like, I've always loved the stylized look of that game. It looks like a comic book in motion.
I also want to play Fuser because it's harmonics.
There's a couple games that are much further off that I really have on my. I really have high hopes for a couple of titles in 2021. One of them is obviously Guilty Gear Strive.
Well, it just has to have the name Guilty Gears in the front of it, and then you'd be hot and bothered for it.
They have been so good at the trickle of information that they're putting out. Like, the characters that they're showing and the style that they're showing. Like, it's so good. And they just revealed that one of my favorite characters is going to be returning to the series after being away for, like, 10 years. So that and Deathloop from Arkane Studios. which should also not come as a surprise.
Yeah, you know, I would really be more excited for Space Crew if it had online co-op, but it's all single player, which is strange. So for those who don't know, Space Crew, you play a crew of a starship, and everybody has their own little things that they have to do, and everything is in real time, so you have the engineer doing this, you have this. You know, it's sort of like playing the Starfleet bridge with the entire ship. But it's not online co-op, and it's not co-op, which just baffles the hell out of me. This is the sort of game in which I would love to be playing with my friends and say, okay, you, take care of the fire over there while I'm going to take the, you know. This is the thing that requires everybody to yell over each other about what they're going to be doing on the ship.
Yeah, that does seem odd to not be a multiplayer game, to have something where you're multifaceted functions going on, and you know, it's difficult for a single player person to do it.
Well,
so
it's made for single player, so it's not gonna be like you have to control everybody at once, but it's just like you have to, you know, you move them around like as you normally would, and you, what's it called? But I don't know. This game would just be hilarious if it was multiplayer. With mm-hmm. 10 players. You know.
There's another game that's coming way sooner that I almost forgot about. Amnesia Rebirth. It's coming it's like right around the corner at the end of this month.
Isn't that awesome?
Oh my god.
Yeah, I still haven't played the first two Amnesia games, right? There were two Amnesia games before this. Yeah, it's Amnesia and Amnesia and then Soma. Right.
Amnesia, Dark Descent, Amnesia, A Machine for Pigs, Soma. Right. And then Amnesia Rebirth is coming on the 20th, I do believe.
I own Soma. I still haven't played it yet.
The good thing about the Amnesia games is that they're all standalone and like only loosely connected. So you don't really need the previous ones to play the new one.
I know, but I'd feel funny about doing it. I'd rather play the first few and then get into the new one.
That's not bad. That's not a bad thing, too. Amnesia Dark Descent holds up. I haven't played Machine for Pigs, but I have played Soma, and I love both. I love Dark Descent, and I love Soma.
They actually have a mode in Soma now in which you can just turn all the monsters off.
That's great, and I hope they do something like that for Rebirth, because like as much as it, those
what
games
I heard,
are
Soma. Who cares about the monsters? That's what I heard. People think the monsters don't really add anything to the game.
They do. They add a constant sense of Pad's shittery.
But I heard that it's the story of the character that really gets under people's skin. The actual, you know, because like all other, like the other games, it's basically discovering who you are and why these things are happening to you.
That's kind of that can kind of be said of all of the frictional games, though.
Yeah, like, but it's supposed to be pants-crappingly scary.
Yeah, I mean, like it is. But it's certainly not about the monster. It's more about, like, your sanity. Yeah. Your sanity is what manifests the monster in Amnesia games. Okay. Spoiler, but those games are, like, years old at this point.
I haven't played them yet, though. It's not that big a deal to me. Yeah, I mean, at some point I'm going to have to play a frictional game.
There is a question of, is it real? Is it not? What am I experiencing? And why is it trying to kill me?
One of them was with Chinese Room. I think that was the Machine for Pigs, right?
Yeah, Frictional Games co-developed with they like passed off some duties to Chinese Room.
Yeah. For those who don't know, Chinese Room does stuff like Everyone's Gone to the Rapture, and I think they did the very first one that we would consider a walking simulator. Oh, damn, I forgot. It was a lady's name. Chinese Room. I gotta look this up. And developer. The Chinese Room, actually, it should be. Here it is. It's British developer. Oh, Dear Esther. That's right. That was basically the one that kicked off everything. Remember Dear Esther? Basically,
yeah, that was a walking simulator.
And it would nothing to do except find these points on the thing, but it was a big hit, and it just kicked off an entire genre. Which is fine, because, you know, I still think the best of all of them is still going to be what happened, the Edith Finch game. Oh, damn, I forgot the name of the damn game. Something to Eat a Finch.
Whatever happened to Edith?
Whatever happened to Edith? I know it's not that.
What happened remains to Edith, Edith Finch? Oh, What Remains, yeah. Sorry, I confused it with Whatever Happened to Robot Jones.
I played Gone Home. I was not impressed at all. I think it was just a bunch of millennials who had a heavy dose of 90s nostalgia. I'm sorry, I didn't like Gone Home. Shoot me. It was What Remains of Edith Finch made Gone Home look like a note, look like a pamphlet.
Hmm. I just finished another Annapurna game, which was I Am Dead, and that one is a banger.
I don't know. I could do an entire... You know, at some point, we're just going to do one episode devoted to What Remains of Edith Finch. just for What Remains of Edith Finch and each of the stories that are told in it.
We'll have to probably all play the game then, in that case.
Here's the thing, Scott. What Remains of Edith Finch is a masterclass of how to tell a story through video games, in which the story and the gameplay are extremely integrated. You know, I mean, a lot of people love the one with the guy working in the fish factory, you know, because it requires you to do two different things at once. One, you're in a fantasy world. The other one, you're chopping off the heads of fish, you know, and all of it is coming together. But I always liked the story about the infant. And I don't want to spoil anything now. Well, I will say this. The entire game is about mortality. Except for one character who's actually a character from a previous game, and I didn't even realize that until I did some backstory on it. Because there was a game that they made called The Unfinished Swan, and one of the characters from The Unfinished Swan apparently is one of the members of the Edith Finch family. So, I mean, it's the sort of game in which you can just watch a walkthrough and get the same idea of everything that happens, you know? I mean, yeah, you'd miss out on, you know, physically doing stuff, but the stories are so well told that, you know, watching a Let's Play for me is like playing the game anyway. And that rarely happens with me. TJ, why don't you give your impressions of What Remains of Edith Finch so it doesn't sound like I'm yammering about it.
It is, is one person experiencing the narratives of many different ancestors and their own imaginations. And, like, that is the best way I know to describe it. It is a trippy adventure through the imaginations of dead ancestors.
Well, not dead ancestors, but how they died. Except for one who just says goodbye and vanishes in a flip book.
Yeah. So, sorry, I had a slight tickle in my throat. But yeah, so like the Annapurna games are almost always trippy, and What Remains of Edith Finch is a pretty good one in my opinion. I Am Dead is like that too. I really enjoy those games. They always have, like, Annapurna is really good at picking out games that are games in a stretched sense, but also have a very unique sort of gameplay mechanic to them that wouldn't be considered like traditional in any sense.
Yeah, one thing you have to understand about Annapurna is that they're not just doing video games. They're doing a lot of indie films as well. They're an entire multimedia thing, and a lot of them are going with the same kind of films. If you look for Annapurna, not Annapurna Interactive, but Annapurna, which is their movie-making thing, you'll see a lot of those kind of films as well. They're basically – they're like the artsy version of Devolver Digital, basically.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So I'm looking at I Am Dead, and it's a puzzle game. Okay.
Yeah, the best way I know how to describe that one is that it's like, where's Waldo? But you're a ghost, and you can like basically dive through objects and see inside of them.
I think you sold a lot of people with just saying that. It's where's Waldo as a ghost.
Mm-hmm. Actually, now that you've just reminded me of a game that I've been watching some Let's Plays of, Phantasmophobia, where you're playing as a ghost hunting team, and you have to, you're calling out the name of the ghosts, and And you're investigating, you're trying to find the ghost, and you'll see the little ghost running around. And what's really interesting is you can get killed in this game. It's a surprise. You die, and then you become a ghost in that house trying to communicate with your team.
So basically it's an evolved version of Luigi's Mansion.
I guess. That's such a stretch, Jonah. Oh, my God.
Except you can kill Luigi.
That's such a stretch. You just stretched that from New York to Florida. Let's try to make that work.
Do you make these scared faces like Luigi does in that game?
No. It's kind of rough around the edge kind of game that clearly needs some more polish. But, you know, the basic concept is you're playing with your friends or at least a group of people, and you're all trying to do these tasks, yelling out the ghost's name and trying to get a reading of a cold room. And then you'll see a sighting, and then suddenly, I guess, you start freaking out. Doors start locking. You're trying to escape. And the next thing you know, you see these gross, decayed hands come in front of your face and kill you. And other people might see you get killed. And then suddenly you're trying to communicate through the void on the other side, and you're trying to talk to your friends. You tell them, they're like, "Do you hear me? Do you hear me, Paul? That you got killed?" And it's just funny.
You want to play Phantasmagoria now?
Oh yeah, that was a good game too.
It's dated, but still.
It's still fun.
Yeah. Anyways, let us know what game that you're really looking forward to in the next month or two, because what's interesting is that there's not many ninth generation exclusive launch games this year, you know? I mean, well, there wasn't going to be any with Microsoft, because they're going to make sure everything worked with the Xbox One, but, you know, Microsoft had the balls to delay Halo Infinite, you know? I mean, they did so much marketing on it, and they decided, you know what, we're just going to wait. We want to make sure we release a game that's actually fun. So, yeah, let us know what games that you want to play. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net. Along with industry news and our gaming history articles, we enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments. By the way, have you ever finished Luigi's Mansion 3, Scott?
No, I didn't. I got stuck on the boss. It was a very difficult boss. It was where you had to be Luigi on the bottom of the under part of a floor, and you're on, and the main Luigi's on top floor, and this ghost, the hotel's ghost owner, is shooting lasers, and it has this little pillar that has laser walls, and Luigi has to go under the floor and disable the laser walls, so that way the regular Luigi can grab the ghost and beat her up and you know, suck out the life energy so he can suck her into the machine. But it's, again, stuff is happening under there too, like little spiders are coming out. So you have to be aware of both battles above the floor and below the floor. And it really helps if you have a second person playing with you to accomplish this battle.
It sounds exactly like the game you were just describing.
Yeah.
Except there's no Luigi in it. Anyways, we will. Well, you can find me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week, and we will talk more about Luigi and his mansion and the new game that he was just playing. I forgot. Wait, what was the name of the game again?
Phantasmophobia.
Phantasmophobia. Okay, because I hear that, I think Phantasmagoria.
Yeah, I heard of. I thought Phantasmagoria too. It's probably not the bestest name to use for this game, but I guess it works. I mean, the concept I think is that you're playing around in a 3D environment with your friends and trying to contact the ghosts and communicate with them, and you can get killed and become a ghost. And I thought that was pretty unique and different.
Yeah, it's an online co-op game, and I believe it's supposed to be scary. I don't know, it's gotten overwhelmingly positive reviews on Steam.
Yeah. So. Yeah, Phasmophobia, right. Okay,
Phasmophobia.
Sorry.
That's the intense fear that you're going to be a character in a Star Wars film and be wasted.
I don't know. Like, I think.
Thank you, Captain Phasma. We're going to hype you up, and we're going to do absolutely nothing with you.
I think it's fear of ghosts.
No, but in this case, it's fear of being Captain Phasma.
Okay.
Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Be cool. Play games, y'all.